Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. This is Dr. John Stamey live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We are on the World Wide Web. We are on TigerRadio.com and WLSC AM and FM, and we are presenting ScaryCast. We're excited tonight. We have John LeMay, who's our favorite recurring guest. He's going to be here as we have a discussion on fake news and Roswell Part 2. So first of all, I want to say a big shout out. We've got a new listener from South Africa, Johan. He's from Pretoria, South Africa. Johan, thanks for being here with us and hope you enjoy the show. Number one. Number two, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, the one and only Dr. Trey Donaway. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, John, and I got to tell you, after last week when you and Devin and I discussed this Roswell thing, I have given it a lot of thought, and it just raises more and more questions. And all last week, I just kept wishing John LeMay was on board so he could give us some reflections on this, because if there's anybody that knows what went on in Roswell and has a writer's opinion of it, that would be John LeMay. So I am very happy to be back this week.
Well, thank you very much. And we'll be introducing that famous gentleman here in just a moment. From Ravenel, South Carolina, the greatest wrestler of all time in Ravenel, South Carolina, the great one, the one and only, the amazing Velvet. How are you doing tonight, Velvet?
I'm doing great. I love coming on the show. I know I missed a few, but I'm back, and I can't wait to get started. Hello, everybody. We're back.
Well, you're still listed as a panelist, so we're glad to have you here, and you're truly one of the coolest people. Last night we had an outstanding pro wrestling interviews, and it was just great. And you get the guests, and you do a great job. So I wanted to say a shout out to you on pro wrestling interviews. And now,
thank you, sir.
As Graham Greene would say, our man from West Hollywood, the one and only, the host that's been with me the longest, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
Hey, John. I'm doing good. It's great to be here with you all tonight. This is going to be a good one.
It's going to be exciting. And absolutely, as Graham Greene, the Pulitzer Prize winning author, would have called you our man in Havana, but you're our man in West Hollywood. So thanks for being here. Just always glad to have you. Now to the man of the hour and a half, or however long this thing happens. This is the one and only John LeMay from Roswell, New Mexico. Big shout outs to everybody in Roswell. Big shout outs to Billy the Kid, William H. Cox II, who you hooked me up with. John LeMay, thank you for being here tonight.
Hey guys, you know, I was thinking, I think it's coming close to a year now, I think, that I've been on it. Wasn't my first one in like September or October or something?
I don't know, but it's great. We love having you on this show because you are truly a content expert, because ScaryCast is a paranormal podcast, and you live in one of the hotbeds in the world of the paranormal, which is Roswell, New Mexico. And we can't thank you enough for being with us. We just love having you, man. It's great.
Oh, always love being here. Yeah, not just live here. I was born here, so.
Well, that's right. You're a real native, and we're so excited. All right, now here's what I'm going to do. Now, thanks to John LeMay, because John LeMay got me the only copy that was readable and legible, and I want to read probably the most important news story in this epic. This is one of the most important things that ever happened to our world, and it came from, of course, where did it come from? It came from the Roswell Daily Record. It was the headline on July the 8th, 1947. And that is a date that is burned into my brain now. It's one of the most important dates in the history of the world. So here it is. RAAF captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. No details of flying disc revealed. Roswell hardware man and wife report disc seen. And now, as Trey Donaway said, you know, you got two stories here, but when you put them together, they're very powerful. And so kudos to Dr. Trey for making that observation. So here we go. The intelligence officer of the 509th Bombardment Group at Roswell Army Air Field announced at noon today that the field has come into possession of a flying saucer. According to information received from the department over authority of Major Jesse A. Marcel, intelligence officer, the disc was recovered on a ranch near the Roswell vicinity after an unidentified rancher had notified Sheriff George Wilcox where he had found the instrument on his premises. Major Marcel and a detail from his department were dispatched to the ranch and recovered the disc, it was stated. After the intelligence officer had inspected the instrument, it was known to higher headquarters, meaning they had to call higher headquarters and tell them about it. The intelligence officer stated that no details of the saucer's construction or its appearance had been revealed. Now here comes part two, which is a critical part of this article. Mr. and Mrs. Dan Wilmot apparently were the only persons in Roswell who have seen what they thought was a flying disc. They were sitting on their porch at 105 South Penn last Wednesday, about 10 minutes before 10 o'clock, when a large glowing object zoomed out of the sky from the southwest, going in a northwesterly direction at a very high rate of speed. Wilmot called Mrs. Wilmot's attention to it, and both ran down the yard to watch. It was in sight less than a minute, perhaps 40 to 45 to 50 seconds, Wilmot estimated. Wilmot said that it appeared to him to be about 1,500 feet high and going fast. Now, he's talking about how high up the instrument was. It was about 1,500 feet high. He estimated between 450 and 500 miles per hour. In appearance, it looked like an oval in shape, like two inverted saucers facing mouth to mouth, or like two old-type washbowls placed together in the same fashion. The entire body glowed as though it were showing through from the inside, though not like it would be if a light were merely underneath. So the whole thing was glowing with light. From where he stood, Wilmot said the object looked to be about 5 feet in size, and making an allowance for this distance from where he figured, it must have been about 15 or 20 feet in diameter, though this is just a guess. Wilmot says he heard no sound, but that Mrs. Wilmot said she heard a swishing sound for a very short time. The object came into view from the southwest and appeared and disappeared over the treetops in the general vicinity of Six Mile Hill. Now, John LeMay, do you know about Six Mile Hill? Is that a landmark?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's west of town, yep.
Okay. Wilmot, who is one of the most respected and reliable citizens in this town, kept the story to himself, hoping someone else would come out and tell about having seen a flying saucer. But finally today decided that he would go ahead and tell about seeing it. The announcement that the RAAF was in possession of one came only a few minutes after he had decided to release the details of what had been seen. Dramatic. One of the most important newspaper articles, at least in the century, if not in of all time. So now,
yeah, well,
Dr. Trey Donaway,
told
me that you wanted. Okay. Talk, John LeMay, and then Dr. Trey Donaway has some questions.
Yeah, before we move on from Wilmot, you know, I just wanted to say the Wilmots are were one of the oldest families in town. I mean, their name changed due to marriage, but they were descended from James Miller, who was a sheep rancher who knew Billy the Kid and John Chisholm and arrived in Roswell in the 1870s. And again, the Wilmots descended from him. So, you know, that family had been in Roswell for a long time, and they weren't newcomers, you know, had deep roots in the town. And I'm sure they were afraid of being ridiculed and didn't want to bring it up until they kind of saw other UFO reports in the news. So I have no doubt that they saw it.
Okay. Now, Trey Donaway, Dr. Trey, our Surgeon General, what questions do you have?
Well, I've only got one
Mr.
question so far, because really what kicked my brain over was the following report. But in the meantime, let me just ask you this. John LeMay, right now, if you say flying saucer to somebody, everyone knows what you're talking about. In 1948, was flying saucer a common word? When did people start talking about flying saucers?
It was when Kenneth Arnold saw them sometime in 47, when they started talking about flying discs and flying saucers. So it would have been kind of a new slang term. So it hadn't been around for a long time.
That would be kind of a new thing then at that time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that goes along with the fact that, you know, this is a relatively new term. That's how they describe it. And this is probably the source of a lot of the flying saucer verbiage that we've heard forever since. But at the time, it would be new. Now, John, Dr. John, it's the next article and the timing of that, the timeline that really makes sense. It really puts the obvious conspiracy theory. It just makes it a perfect setup for a conspiracy theory, because it's obvious that somebody's trying to cover something up. So here you have the first article, which the intelligence officer, this is an officer in the military who supposedly understands what's going on, reported that they recovered an object. Didn't say where it was from, didn't have any description of it, but an object. And then you had some eyewitnesses that saw something pass overhead. And right now, that's if they left it at that, it could just be say, oh, we don't know what it was. But the next article, John, Dr. John, that's what I want you to read.
Okay, this is the single most telling fake news article, I believe, in this century. And it comes from the Dallas office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And it was sent to the Cincinnati office, which I found out was a major, major office for the FBI. That was like their grand headquarters in the eastern Midwest. Okay? Flying disc.
Okay.
Information concerning 8th Air Force telephonically advised this office that an object purporting to be a flying disc was recovered near Roswell, New Mexico. This date.
Now John, go through the timeline. So the date of the report from the military officer, the intelligence officer, was what was the date?
This is, again, on July the 8th. Now, here's what I want to say, because John LeMay suggested that I buy the book Witness to Roswell by Thomas Carey and Donald Schmidt. And he said that Witness to Roswell and Children of Roswell are the best references to the event. Is that correct, John LeMay?
Yeah, as far as the ones I've read, I haven't read all the new ones, so I could be wrong. But, you know, I've met Tom Carey. I like him. You know, but again, I read the book, and it, to me, was the best book on Roswell I'd ever read.
Well, I can tell you that what I want to do is I want to finish the FBI article, and then I want to read a section of Carey's book, which is called An Insult to Reality. And I think this is the most brilliant statement. That is going to be the name of this chapter in my book coming up, which is going to be about UFOs and surviving a UFO invasion. I think it's important. So, Dr. Donaway, here is the article. The disc is hexagonal in shape and was suspended from a balloon by a cable, which balloon was approximately 20 feet in diameter. Somebody, which was redacted, further advised that the object found resembled a high-altitude weather balloon with a radar deflector, not that telephonic conversation between the office and Wright Field had not borne out this belief. Disc and balloon are being transported to Wright Field, now Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, by special plane for examination. Information provided this office because of national interest in the case and fact that national broadcasting company NBC, the Associated Press, and others attempting to break the story of location of disc today. Somebody, redacted, advised would request Wright Field to advise Cincinnati office results of examination. No further investigation is being conducted. No further investigation is being conducted. Now, I want to go from witness to Roswell, and this is the most important thing that I've ever read on Scarycast. This is an insult to reality. We ask you to consider the following. On Tuesday, July the 8th at 11 a.m. Mountain Time, Roswell Army Air Force Commanding Officer Colonel William Blanchard announced the recovery of a flying disc. It is important to note that Blanchard was the officer entrusted with oversight of the first atomic bomb strike force in the world based on the RAAF. This was 2.5 days after Washington, D.C. was alerted to a crash that would initiate their orchestration of Blanchard's press release. Now, does everybody hear that? Sunday, the crash happened, and Washington was alerted of what happened, and they knew what Blanchard was going to put in the press release. Okay? Later that same day, at about 4:30 Central Standard Time, General Roger Ramey, the commander of the 8th Air Force and Blanchard's supervising officer, presented to the press an alternate story. He claimed the Army had recovered a Rawan target device suspended from a neoprene rubber balloon. Rawan is a method of determining wind speed or wind direction using radar or radio waves to track a balloon carrying either a radar-sensitive target or a radio transponder. Number three, Mac Brizel, the ranch foreman who first discovered the debris field, was abducted and detained by the United States Army Air Force for 4 or 5 days while cleanup operations continued on the site. Brizel was denied access to a phone, was given an Army physical, and was subjected to rigorous questioning and intimidation while under arrest at RAAF. Extreme, number four, extreme security measures were exercised at the ranch where Brazil was working and separate related locations. Armed guards encircled the primary areas. A second cordon was placed around the outer perimeter. Riflemen were stationed on the surrounding hills, and the military police were posted on outlying roads that led into these immediate areas. Special, number five, special unscheduled flights arrived from Washington, D.C., with additional units arriving from White Sands Air Force Base in Alamogordo, New Mexico, and Fort Bliss, El Paso, Texas, and Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Unscheduled flights from Roswell transported wreckage or remains from Fort Worth, Texas, to Patterson Air Force in Dayton, Ohio, Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C., and the Los Alamos Nuclear Laboratory via truck from Kirtland. Senator Dennis Chavez, chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, phoned Walter Whitmore Sr., a majority owner of station KGFL in Roswell. Now, John LeMay, that's still a radio station in Roswell, correct?
No, not anymore.
It's gone. to strongly advise them to do as was instructed by the Federal Communication Commission in an earlier call and not broadcast a wire-recorded interview with Mac Brazel. Now, finally, an FBI telex dated July the 8th, 1947, at 6:17 p.m. Central Standard Time from the Bureau's Dallas office disputed General Ramey's announcement to the press that the special flight transporting the wreckage to Wright Field had been canceled, as well as Ramey's explanation of the balloon and the foil radar target. So there we go. They have covered it up with the FBI memo, and this comes directly from Witness to Roswell, which is the book that John LeMay suggested that we read, and I bought it, I read it, and I was shocked. And Dr. Trey Donaway, the phrase, an insult to reality.
I just hope I never find a weather balloon in my backyard. Good Lord. they just shut me down, you know. Can you imagine the drogue shoot effect of a weather balloon going on something I don't know how very fast is for the witness, but you know, that would slow things down. And then to have it adjacent to it, like a wreckage. I mean, all they've done is they've just said, well, obviously, we're going to cover this way up. And, you know, nothing to see here. Move along. Nothing to see. They called out all of these additional people to fly in. This is on the thing that said no investigation would be made. It's just
nuts. No. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely nuts. The story goes on that they intimidated. They actually, it is reported in this book, they actually shot someone who said they wouldn't keep quiet about it. And I don't know. But this is frightening. Well, Dr. Trey, I know where the George Washington House is in Camden. I'm going to deliver you a weather balloon, and it's going to Velvet and I are going
to. They will brick you up to the world if you do that. Yeah, okay.
You ought to just fly in on the weather balloon, and that way when the men in black show up, you'll be right there with me.
Well,
I mean, John LeMay,
great.
This sounds like
great.
if this is not a cover-up, then what could it possibly be? I mean, did the federal government just say, oh, we're just going to do this cover up because nobody will figure this one out?
And we'll put all the security up there for no reason.
Yeah, assuming the basic facts were reported in the newspaper, and then the look at the action that it precipitated. It's not something that wasn't real. So simply, it had to be real, and it had to be of serious consequence. Now, I understand, you know, the Cold War was perking along at this time, or they're getting ready to start the Cold War, and governments are always protective of what they say. I mean, even if you look at the newspapers today, you see where the outgoing president of Iraq stated, for the record, that sometimes the government didn't really say exactly what went on. Well, that's because every government is guilty of covering things up and having sins of at least of omission. Well, we didn't give you the whole story. I can understand that for national security purposes, but to just blow this off and to say nothing happened, that's just nuts. Obviously something happened. And if they're not going to talk about it, then it just hatches a wonderful conspiracy theory. I don't see any other way to look at the presumptively we have straight facts. And even if you just look at the bare bones of the facts, I can't see anything other than an obvious cover up.
Absolutely.
Sir.
Because you wouldn't have all the security for a weather balloon for all these years and saying nothing ever happened, but you can't come close to the place. Come on.
Right.
Okay, now we're going to shift over to
story, though, too. because they added stuff to it later on.
Exactly. Yeah, now, I want to shift gears.
Dummy.
I want to shift gears to Kansas, to the great state of Kansas, and Devin Tate. Devin is working on, and we are going to be having later this year, the National UFO Conference. And Devin Tate took the time and took the money to buy a very rare book to talk about an extremely important UFO event. Now, Devin, I asked you earlier, and you said you wouldn't mind talking about it. Can you please give us the thumbnail of what happened in Kansas and some of the dirty dealings that people had to put up with?
Sure. So this happened when I was a kid really growing up in a town called Paradise, which is in Russell County. So Russell, Kansas is the county seat. And that's where a lady named Donna Butts lived, and she was a housewife at that time. And she basically had a UFO encounter while she was driving back on the interstate highway from Salina, which is about an hour and 20 minutes east of there. So at the time, you know, she didn't really think much of it. She saw the UFO. She was surprised that the people in the car with her, which was her mother-in-law and two of her children, didn't seem to see it or acknowledge it. But later she realized that she had actually been abducted by the UFO. And she, from that point on, she was in contact with them. So she made a number of predictions and claims, and, you know, unfortunately a lot of them did not come out to be true, but she was very clear that these are her interpretations of the messages she was receiving. So she wasn't saying that this is exactly what they're saying. This was her interpretation of the messages she would get. But it was really interesting when I was a kid because it was a lot of talk going on. It was in the newspapers. And what ended up happening is she had been referred to this doctor who, you know, I think friends and family wanted him to check her out to see if everything was okay. And he ended up believing everything she said and kind of becoming her assistant. And so they wrote this book together. And later in the saga, they actually – she disappeared, and several members of the group, by this time she kind of amassed a group of people that were, you know, kind of the followers of what she was preaching, essentially, which was that these UFOs and aliens are actually biblical beings who, you know, had to do with the Bible, and it had to do with God and Satan, and there was good aliens and bad aliens. And so they disappeared for a while, and it turned out she was taking them to Israel for like a you know, some sort of a journey. So after that happened, she kind of got in a lot of trouble, and she basically went silent and moved away, and no one has heard from her since that attempted trip to Israel. So, but one of the interesting things is she had, she was looking a lot into the seventh trumpeter. That's from the book of Revelations. And at that same time, they installed a statue of the seventh trumpeter in the city park there. And it was completely unrelated. You know, she didn't have an influence over the artist that created it, but that artist ended up joining her group because, you know, they believed it was a sign. It was a sign from the good aliens, which they called the Amerikans. So yeah, this was all happening when I grew up, and I always wanted to learn more about it because I was too young at the time to really understand or know what was going on. So I did get this book, and I will be, you know, diving further into it.
Wow, Devin, that is incredible. So people get in trouble for, spilling the beans on this stuff. John LeMay.
And the doctor, comment, that sure. The doctor who helped her, you know, at that time they were actually trying to go after doctors who were giving prescription drugs to people that didn't need them or giving out too many, you know, they were trying to crack down basically on doctors giving out too many prescription drugs. And so even though he wasn't necessarily doing that, they decided to take the opportunity to prevent him from practicing his medical you know, his medical practice anymore because of this. They just thought it was they didn't think that he was sound mentally because of this work that he had done with UFOs.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and say I'm going to go ahead and interject something. I was threatened with my job when I had Dr. Sally Ryan Feather, whose father was J.B. Ryan, and he invented the term ESP. And I was going to teach a bunch of students statistics using the Zener cards, which are the ESP cards. And I was told by my department chair and boss that if that happened, I would not have a job after Christmas. Now, I wish I had known what I do now. I would own that university. And that is the most god-awful place in America. It's not a university. I don't know what it is, but it's not a university. It's not an institution of higher learning. And so people are out there that really want to squelch this, whether they're religious zealots or whatever. People don't like the paranormal. All right, now, John LeMay, I'm going to turn everything over to you for a bit. And we would like – and just talk to us a little bit about Roswell, this whole event, and we appreciate everything that you do for us.
Well, sure. Yeah, you know, to me, Roswell – I think I used this analogy before, you know, where they talk about one day it's a UFO and the next day it's a weather balloon. It's really just like the kid who walks into his parents' bedroom at the wrong time and they tell him they were just wrestling, except for we're the kid and the government is the parent, you know. And that everybody knows they're lying because the story doesn't add up. And what's more, you know, okay, first it's a weather balloon, and then by the mid-1990s they added this new element to the story, which was they had crash test dummies on the weather balloons or something like that. And the crash test dummies, well, they were the alien bodies. Because in perspective, you've got to realize, okay, those initial stories and the 1947 paper, they didn't need to address alien bodies because there was no talk of alien bodies in the articles, right? I mean, I'm not misremembering wrong. So the talk of the alien bodies came about later on, because after some time had passed, let's see, like about 40 years, and by the 1980s, these servicemen finally started talking about alien bodies, and that's when that started to leak out. Or actually, it might have leaked out with Brillat and Moore's Roswell incident book. I think there was talk of bodies in there. It's the late 70s. So, you know, now it's like the military, they have to address the bodies, which they didn't do before. So now all of a sudden here's this story about these crash test dummies. Well, I mean, why didn't they mention the crash test dummies along with the original weather balloon story? There's no harm in saying we had some crash test dummies riding on the balloons, you know.
Riding in the unmanned weather balloon because they're dummies, right? So they didn't know they weren't supposed to be in there.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, it's just like when you have a friend who's lying to you, and every time they tell you a different story. You know something's not right. So, but, again, everyone who is more trustworthy, because I wouldn't call the government trustworthy, everyone who's trustworthy who talks about the Roswell incident and who says they were there, they all basically say the same thing with some variations, but that happens with any, you know, any strange incident you witness or something exciting like a car wreck, people all perceive it a little differently. But basically everyone says, you know, it was a spacecraft and it had alien bodies. So almost all of them will say that. So, I mean, it really stands to reason that's probably what it was. That's the simplest answer. You know, it takes more effort to try and make the weather balloon and the dummies work than it does the spacecraft and the aliens.
Okay. Very well put. And now I'll go ahead and go on the record. I've got a shocking story to tell. I may have told some of you, but I'll go ahead and officially say it here on ScaryCast. Nobody knows where the alien bodies went. None of the so-called headlines, none of the, you know, this is where they went, they didn't go there. I know because I had a friend and his father was in charge of a major Air Force base. And he told me one night where the alien bodies were. He told me about seeing them. And that was on a Friday night. And on Monday morning, there were two black cars sitting outside of my music store in Clemson, South Carolina. And they stayed there for 2 years. And it was amazing. It was the men in black. I saw them. I saw them get out of the car occasionally. And they were pretty strange looking. Nobody knows where they went. It went to Wright-Patterson. It went to wherever. It's all wrong because I know where they went, but I'll never tell. Because I got off that hot list after 2 years, and I don't want to get back on it, even though, and I guess it'd probably be harmful to the government. So I don't want to tell them where they went, but I know where they went. And it's frightening to know something and to have, it was in 1991 and 92 that I was followed. So there you go. I won't tell. I can't wait for the reception to get fuzzy and everything like it does occasionally when I tell things like this. So, you know, now we know, yes, there were aliens. Yes, they were taken by the military. Yes, the military went through and terrorized the town of Roswell. And it quickly just disappeared. I mean, people wanted to forget it. You know, if you get terrorized about something, you want to forget it. You just do. So we're back to square one. They're scrambling. There's a 995-page report that's absolute garbage. As we discussed last week, I said that, you know, you can't write a 995-page report. One person or even a group of people can't write that in a year. Dr. Trey Donaway, what did you call that? It was like a limitation?
Rate-limiting step.
It was a rate-limiting step. That's right. You can't do that much, that many interviews and that much work and produce a document like that in a year. You can't do it. So, again, we have another. That's my first statement to make, is that you can't produce this much research in this short period of time. So, I mean, come on.
Well, I don't know,
that's
John.
Okay.
Really. I mean, look at what's going on right now. Should we be wearing a mask or not?
Everybody is at Walmart Neighborhood Market.
How many days have we had to figure this one out? How even with the changing information, how long has it come out? How long has it been since we've come out with a rational decision on how to handle mask on, mask off? So if they can't figure that out, which is one question, I doubt if they really could throw that 900-page paper together in short order.
995 pages, I'll say. God, that 95 pages, that's about a third of a year. But anyway, so I guess we've talked about it. We've talked about Roswell at length. And this is going to be one of the chapters in the book, Surviving a UFO Invasion. And the title of the chapter is going to be called An Insult to Reality, and in honor of Thomas Carey and Donald Schmidt. Now, John LeMay, is Thomas Carey still alive?
Yeah, as far as I know, he is. And Don Schmidt definitely is. He's in Roswell quite a bit. He's not from Roswell, but he's here at the UFO Museum pretty often.
Okay, well, I guess I'll start doing some wizardry, and I'll try to find those guys and see if you and I can have a talk with them, because I think it would be very important for the book and pretty much a transcript of this show will be in the book. And I think it's important because what everybody has had to say really, really matters. I'll get more detail from Devin. I'll get more detail The Amazing Velvet. And the amazing, and Trey, Dr. Trey, the Amazing Velvet and I are going to deliver a metallic weather balloon to you. We are going to do that.
Yes.
That if hell
working on it
over,
now.
We are going to do it, and we'll let you and your wife know, and you can be there when the thing shows up. Will that be okay?
And then when we crash it, they will brick off your house for the rest of your life.
Dr. Trey
you'll never be
did
seen
not
again.
Respond.
You'll be never. Dr. Trey Dunaway, you're done. Hey, buddy. Did he disappear?
He did. They actually.
Oh,
there he is.
Dr. John?
Oh, Dr.
I just
Dr. Trey,
just
are you there?
I just got cut off.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing a thing.
Yes, you did.
Well,
you
to
think
recap,
the men in black
recap,
are out there?
Yes, they are.
Yeah,
and to recap,
they probably
we're dropping a weather balloon off on your yard, and then they're going to brick off. The government's going to brick off your house for the rest of your life, and you'll never be seen again.
I think this insult to reality. That's really what true fake news is about. You know they're making up a story, and yet
yes,
and it's totally apparent. And you understand that they do make up stories. I mean, that's the right of any government to make up stories.
Anybody can make up a story. Yeah.
To obfuscate. All you got to do is go to a trial and ask the guilty if they did it or not.
Oh, yeah,
and they're going to be making up stories.
Right.
So people make up stories. So that's kind of their right to make up stories. But when it's so blatant, where you're saying, what else could it be other than a made-up story? But it just boggles my mind. I am not a conspiracy theory guy. I mean, you know, I'm pretty rational. But when you're faced with something that looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, walks like a duck,
right?
You know, it's hard to say, no, that's a Bengal tiger and expect somebody to believe
right.
it.
Yeah. Okay, Trey, I've been dying to bring this up
you're...
all night. So, yeah. You talk about what you can see with your own eyes. Has anyone seen the video? And it's not just the internet video. It aired on one of the major news networks. It was either MSNBC, one of them. It's a very simple video. Biden's walking outside the White House. He's being interviewed by reporters. The camera is from the reporter's perspective, right? And underneath at the bottom of the frame, you see a microphone. Actually, I think you might see several microphones, you know, extended towards Biden. He's talking to him. He gets too close. He reaches out his hand, and his hands go through the microphones like they're holograms. Now, the implication there is that there were no microphones. They were CGI'd into the frame, and that did air on national television, and they screwed up. And it doesn't prove anything. It does not prove any single wild conspiracy theory you have about Biden or anything. But it shows you that they faked a video of him talking to reporters. And the question is, why? And I don't know if you can still find that video, but did anyone on here see that?
No,
I didn't see it.
I did not. But I think the apparent thing is to keep him doing something daily, weekly, so that he's in the public eye, so they don't think that he's actually gone or whatever, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think that's just a ruse to keep him in the public eye, because every time he disappears, they say, oh, we haven't seen the president. And I think that's why they did that.
But, you know, John LeMay, I think, remember we talked about the Godzilla movie with the Godzilla? Where Raymond Burr was in the Godzilla movie when they made it the American version. Wasn't it Raymond Burr and
right.
Godzilla?
He,
who?
Yeah, he got edited into it, but he never actually was on set.
Right. And I am looking at a Wikipedia article, and it talks about how Raymond Burr was gay. And I don't care if he was gay or not, but I was just flabbergasted. And then they went... And then they explained how they went to all sorts of details to make him appear heterosexual. They set him up with Natalie Wood, who is an attractive woman. And the people that created the image, so the image people in Hollywood, created a whole lie to to make him appear to be something he wasn't. And if they did that at the time of the Godzilla movies, Lord knows they do it with politicians and people in the public eye. It wouldn't surprise me at all on a national level that all governments aren't making their leaders appear to be better, more photogenic, better to deliver a message from appearance. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that if you have that kind of clout and if your appearance makes that much of a difference on a world stage, I would say just about everything a president would be in would be very well crafted and choreographed to make sure that they present the whatever they determine is the best appearance for any world leader to be. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Well, you know, there was a lady who she's a professional extra, you know, like a movie extra.
Yes.
That's what she does for a living. And she was watching the inauguration, and she has a trained eye. You know, she looks for herself as an extra in movies. And, you know, movies, they happen so fast, and they're not real. They don't really concern themselves with reality. So, you know, this lady could see herself kind of in movies. You know, she would notice herself moving from one shot to another, and she essentially noticed continuity errors, what you would call continuity
right.
errors. If you're an eagle eye and you pay attention. She claims she watched the inauguration and caught continuity errors of people in different clothing and different shots behind Biden and the other politicians, and that they would switch from frame to frame. You know, in other words, it was edited in post, was her, you know, implication, which is also kind of an interesting aspect to this controlled media, whatever it is we've got going on.
Well, again, when you have a mass market and you're driving revenue from appearances, revenue from advertisers, revenue from whatever you're selling, you know, it all makes a difference. I mean, in order to see that, all you have to do is look at the photographs of an Airbnb. You know, you see these photographs and they look great, and you actually show up and the place is a dump. Well, you can see where they could stage the picture, and of course, they're going to stage it so it looks as good as it can possibly look, which isn't necessarily reality. So I think it's just the nature of the beast.
Dating apps, same way.
That's right. Yeah, and dating apps, of course, when people just want to present an appearance, and it is so commonplace today, and the technology tools to achieve that are becoming easier and easier to create. So if you have an image professional who is trying to project the best image of a public figure or whoever they're trying to project a positive image of, they're going to use those tools if they can, if they think it's going to enhance their appearance. So they'll use them as a matter of course, without even saying, oh, should we do this? The answer would be, well, of course we should, because our job is to make the appearance of this individual who's paying us to do this look the very best.
Well, at the same time, I would add that there are also people out there that are paid to create fakes, right? To create
right.
things that cast doubt on things or make things look a certain way. So it's really hard to tell sometimes if something is real or if it was actually created to look real with some little detail off to sow doubt.
Right. I know
work.
For me, another element of fake news that leads to conspiracy theories and this type of thing is that everyone's used to – it used to be you'd read a newspaper, and the newspaper might be multiple columns, and by the time you finish the article, you kind of had a pretty good idea what's going on. Now, if you have three paragraphs on something, I mean short paragraphs, short enough to fit on your phone so you can read, that's like the news article, and it's not even a news article. And half of it seems to be more opinion rather than actual news. No wonder we got fake news. Also, that's
All right.
done because All right. the ability for someone to follow a line of thought is as long as a gnat's ability to do it too. Difficult, very difficult.
Got to put you over
okay.
somehow.
Well, there's a wrestling phrase if I ever heard one. I've got to tell everybody a funny story. This happened to me in Clemson when I was down there and I was in graduate school. And there was a young lady who said that her father was the senior editor of the Weekly World News. Now, the Weekly World News, if you remember it, it had Alien Backs Clinton, Alien Backs everybody. It was the single most entertaining thing at the grocery store in the world, the Weekly World News. So I had an idea. And so her father came up to Clemson, and he took everybody out for a pizza party, okay? And so I had this idea because there was a fella that had an old limo, and he had a license plate that said Elvis. And so I took a picture of that on Strode Circle, just some local little road. And I said, here's my story. Elvis is alive in Clemson. Of course, this was after Elvis had supposedly died. And it showed a picture of a driver, someone in the front, and someone in the back. Because the picture of the person in the back was me. And so that made it to the Weekly World News with the headline,
that's funny.
Elvis alive in Clemson.
That's,
I mean,
funny.
This is how they created news. And it was fun. I mean, nobody really thought that it was – nobody knew that Elvis was still alive. But the idea
– oh, no, but, John, you know,
story,
somebody thought that was true. Somebody thought that was true, and that's what makes it so fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure there was some lady in Ocala, Florida, and some dude in Prescott, Arizona, thought it was true, and that's what mattered. But that's how they created their stories, and it was in there. I can't find it because, I mean, I've lost it in moving and everything. But it was hysterical. This is how they created news. We all knew it was fake news. But you know what? I'm going to say this about fake news. Somehow, we kind of wish it was true. You know, because it's so much fun. We kind of wish it was true, but it might not be. But that's what fake news is. And I think we've talked about fake news, and I think it's time now. I'm going to go around the table. I'm going to let everybody give us their closing thoughts, because this is truly, we're missing Robin tonight because we love Robin, and she is going to be doing better. She's going to be doing better for sure, and she'll be back next week. And we got some great guests lined up, I'll tell you that. I can't remember them. Right now I'm involved in trying to host the show. But so we were going to go first and last. So, John LeMay, tell us what you think, and then I'll let you finish the show with where you're going in the future. So, John LeMay, the great John LeMay, the great paranormal author, and the very well-published author on Amazon, tell us what you think.
I'll just say again, you know, I've lived in Roswell my whole life. I know the people here. Of course, everybody wants to make a buck and, you know, promote tourism, but, you know, they call the witnesses to Roswell the greatest generation. To me, I mean, guys like that might play a prank, but eventually they'd tell you it was a prank. I don't think people like that would take your money and just really deceive you, you know, in such a way that could really change your view of the world for that many years. You know, so when those guys say they saw aliens, I believe they saw aliens. So that's how I would wrap it up.
Okay, and I think you're looking, I think Rendlesham Forest is the same thing over in England. I think they saw a UFO. I believe they did. I really do. So there's props for Rendlesham Forest and props for Roswell, two of the most important UFO sightings in the history, at least in the history of the last century. Okay, the Amazing Velvet. Then we're going to go to Devin Tate.
Yes.
Then we're going to go to Trey Donaway. The Amazing Velvet, what do you think?
I think something was seen, something was there, something was had. You wouldn't have all the security for these many a years later, that you can't get to the place, see nothing. You know, it's all wrapped up in a nice little bow, and now they have to give out bits and pieces every year now, you know, to say, yes, we've seen something. You know, come on. Somebody saw something. It's there. It may be gone now, but it was there. You know, that's, I mean, that's what I got. I think that, I believe that something was there. So, yeah, don't
okay.
Men in Black, don't
well,
come to me
you.
Yet. I hang out with John. Just get him first.
Oh, I'm going to say something at the very end. All right, Devin Tate, our man in West Hollywood, who is one of the most creative and enjoyable people that we've ever had on ScaryCast. What are your closing remarks?
Well, I want to send my best well wishes thoughts to Robin, but this all the talk about fake news reminded me of a really quick story I want to share. Back when I was in college many, many years ago, I was a journalist. I wrote for the newspaper and the yearbook at my college. And, you know, I never would have printed anything fake or anything that I didn't think was 100% true. But in a small town, sometimes you have to find newsworthy things and spin them into bigger news than they really might be. So I noticed that the sex shop in town had recently rebranded and put a new sign up. The store was called Ticklers, and, you know, they had X-rated videos and all kinds of adult toys. But they had put just a kind of clip art type photo of a woman up on their sign, and a few days later it was blocked out with cardboard. And so I made a whole story about it. I called the landlord. I called the business owner. I found out it was literally clip art from like a salon catalog. Like if you have a hair salon, you could pick out this particular clip out, and that's what clip art, and that's what they did. But the landlord did not like it. He thought it was too risque. He thought it was too, you know, it was just too sexy. And he said he had common horse sense, and he made them cover it up. But the good news is now, over 20 years later, I was just back home a couple of weeks ago, and not only is the sign still there, but it is now uncovered, so you can see the clip art lady in all her glory.
That's great. That is the best
awesome.
News ScaryCast could ever produce. The Surgeon General.
Thank you,
ScaryCast, Dr. Trey Donaway. What is
I think my final
story?
My final thought
think?
Is I hope that most fake news can be interpreted as fake news, so everyone can enjoy the humor behind fake news. But I also hope that when it's serious things like how to avoid getting COVID, that people really pay attention to the sources and understand that there are people out there who are trying to make a buck off of this. And to always try to figure out the motivation of why someone would write a certain article with a certain slant before you decide it's real or not.
Hear, hear.
Thank you very much. And John LeMay, closing arguments.
More like a closing statement, because these are strange times we live in. And if you can't see that they're strange times, I don't know what to tell you. But to me, 2020 and 2021 have been like the Roswell incident for the entire world. There is wild stuff going on in every single country that our news doesn't always report on. So, I mean, my advice to listeners would be to ferret that out and just try and see what's really going on in the world, because this is not normal. And we're at a very pivotal point in our history. And I think at some point before the end of the year or into next year, I think something's going to change, because something has to give, because this is absolutely not normal. So that would be my closing statement for the night.
Well, thank you, John LeMay, and thank you to all of our panelists and our guest, John LeMay. Thank you for being with us. We'll see you next week on the one, the only, the greatest paranormal show in the world, at least we think so, ScaryCast. See you next week. Take care, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Now if I can shut this thing down, it'll be great.